it's all about the end of the way. Song called Jordan, Emmylou Harris and Company. Word from the Ball Brothers, Someday, the name of their song. And from Karen Fisher, The New Has Come. 10.5 minutes after the hour. It's a Tuesday morning. That means we get to talk to Dr. Don. Dr. Don Clark, a biochemist, member of the board of Creation Moments. Their website, creationmoments.com. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Don, happy Tuesday. How are things down there in Garden Valley, Texas?
Well, happy Tuesday to you. It's overcast, okay, and a little wet, and temperatures in the upper 30s at the moment.
Upper 30s. Okay. Well, you're sweltering then.
Yeah. We don't have any. We don't have the the problem of our septic tank freezing.
You're throwing windows open and hanging up the winter clothes now and getting ready for spring. That sounds pretty nice from this standpoint. We're about 11 below this morning, and wind chills far colder than that. But that's okay, because we've been hardened off now. Our brains have been numbed, and we're able to withstand the cold now to a great degree
good.
Here. Yeah. And the thing, though, that does get some of us, there are certain diseases that seem to be popping up around. Things that I remember from my childhood. I remember taking a polio vaccine on a sugar cube. Back in grade school, they would herd us all down to it wasn't the nurse's office. They didn't have nurses in those days. I forgot where we must have gone to, like a clinic, and they had sugar cubes that had this polio vaccine. We think some of us got the real vaccine, some of us got a placebo. It was like we were part of a test. They were using my neighborhood was using its own school children as guinea pigs in this experiment, and then later on, we all got shots. The sugar cube was nice, but it wasn't, you know, it didn't scare anybody, so they decided to do shots instead. And I remember going to a birthday party, and this must have been about 1956, and it was a birthday party for my best friend, Petey Bridges. And there were a whole bunch of kids there, one of whom, within the next couple of weeks after the party, was diagnosed with polio. And I've never seen my mother panic like she did. And it was immediately down to the doctor, where Dr. Barrett pulled out a needle about 6 inches long and stuck it in my backside and said, "This will protect you, son, from polio." And I've always had full confidence that that would be the case. I've never had polio or any hint of polio, but I do see that it's popping up again in places. I see that whooping cough seems to be staging a comeback. Diseases that we thought we had whipped before, like mumps and measles, seem to be making a comeback. How come?
Well, that's a interesting question, because one could ask the question: are we just not vaccinating people anymore?
Are parents are not writing this off now and just forgetting it or ignoring it?
Well, no, that's not the case. It's not a case of compliance. It's a case of these diseases are popping up. Let's take the whooping cough, for example. That's caused by the pertussis bacteria, and it appears, it seems at least, that the bacteria is changing over time, so the vaccines aren't working anymore, or at least not working as well as perhaps they did in the past. So just like you have antibiotic resistance, it looks like we're getting both virus and bacteria resistance to vaccinations.
Now, we talked about viruses and bacteria last week, as I recall. Explain the difference between the two again. One, a virus versus a bacteria.
Well, a bacteria is a complete cell. It's what's called a prokaryotic cell. The cells in our body are eukaryotic, and we have cell membranes, and bacteria have a cell membrane, but theirs is a rigid membrane, which helps protect the one-celled organism. A virus, on the other hand, is could have just RNA, if it's a retrovirus, for example, or it could have DNA, but then there's a protein coat around the virus, and there's some protein mechanism for getting it into the target cell, whether it be a bacteria, in which case it's a bacteriophage, mm-hmm. or whether it be, you know, one of our cells, a eukaryotic cell, and in which case it's, you know, we just call it a virus.
Would it be correct to call them each parasitic? They need another organism to survive?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you know, bacteria, or you could think of bacteria like cleanup crews, and they'll eat debris of various types, and that's good because we have, as I said, last week, we've got billions and billions of bacteria in our gut, and the purpose of them is, well, they help. They live because there's food that we have eaten that needs to be digested, mm-hmm. and so they do the chewing up of the food, breaking it down into smaller components, and then we can absorb the components that the bacteria have chewed up.
Now, so they really solve problems for us. Then they take away the old cells that have died and allow for new cells to develop. A bacterium is singular, right? Bacteria is
yes.
plural. Is,
uh-huh.
is a bacterium a living thing, an organism with a life cycle, you know, and it meets all the tests, scientific tests for life?
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. A bacteria is. A virus is not. I mean, uh-huh. A virus has to take over the reproductive machinery of a cell in order to reproduce.
But when you say has to take over, it almost sounds like intent, like somehow it was created to do this. But is it like a machine then?
Well, yeah, now we're getting into philosophy of life.
Well,
of course, it's
we do that here from time to time.
It does take over the machinery of the cell, of whatever mm-hmm. it's infecting, whether it's a plant cell or whether it's a human cell or animal cell or whatever. It does take over the reproductive machine of it. Machinery. In the case of, let's just take a retrovirus. I mean, an RNA type of virus. It first has to duplicate and make DNA, and so it uses the components within the cell that are naturally there, mm-hmm. and duplicates the RNA and makes it turns it into a DNA, and then the DNA. Of course, can be used to make proteins and other RNA pieces to then go ahead and put together more viruses.
But the result then of both the virus action and the bacteria action is to reproduce more of itself, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. It is, but the bacteria typically are chewing up dead matter, mm-hmm. For example. If you get a cut, as we talked about before, you're going to have bacteria around. You have got bacteria on your surface of your skin, and they're pretty much chewing up the dead material or the dead and dying cells. Mm-hmm. A virus it has to have some mechanism of getting inside the cell, and sometimes it just sticks to the cell surface and gets engulfed in the cell by the cell's own cleanup mechanism, mm-hmm. and then gets tricked into taking the virus in, or it has an injection system, as the tobacco mosaic virus. It actually sticks to the plant cells, and then once it's stuck, it kind of injects the RNA or the DNA into okay. Into the infected cell. So they work by different mechanisms. Viruses, I wouldn't necessarily call, cleanup crews, because they are making more of themselves. So is bacteria. But as we've talked about last week, we have a lot of very beneficial bacteria. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we could say the same thing about viruses.
I don't know if any of this is beneficial. Okay, well, let's talk then about vaccines. Now, certainly back in the late 18th century, and I think that's when vaccines came to be, they didn't know all this about viruses and bacteria. How did they know that vaccines would work, and how are vaccines designed to work?
Well, both bacteria and viruses, for example, have proteins associated with them, and typically proteins associated with the outside of the virus or the bacteria. And so you one way of the traditional way of making a vaccine is you deactivate or denature the virus, or the bacteria, for example, and which means you make it not viral, not effective.
But somehow so you have to isolate it first. You have to have a batch of it.
Yeah, you have to isolate that particular bacteria or virus. And then you deactivate it typically by heating or denaturing it, some way. Mm-hmm. And then you take, they would then inject that into an animal that has the capability of making antibodies to it. Then you would be able to get or collect the antibodies from that, and then you would have a vaccine against that particular virus, for mm-hmm. example.
Didn't they use horses? Didn't they use horses for that? Somehow that strikes me as having
a lot of vaccines these days are using, let's say, chicken eggs, and injecting them into the chicken eggs, and then isolating them from that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a vaccine would be injected with the denatured viruses or proteins isolated from viruses and bacteria, and so it would be a foreign substance in your body, and then your body would naturally produce antibodies against that mm-hmm. antigen, it's called, or okay. that foreign protein.
Okay. David, we're getting a lot of noise from your mic there. I don't know if you want to. Sounds like it's turned itself up. If you can tackle that for me, thank you.
Huh? Really?
Oh yeah. Now you're real loud. See, so yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, we got something going. That's all these automatic Skype updates sometimes.
Weird
cause problems. So anyway, I'd fix that here. I don't want to. Don is on a roll here. I'm learning a lot.
Okay.
So that's how they do vaccines now. But and I think horses were involved at some point in history anyway, because they would develop the antibodies, and then is it a serum that they draw from the animal or from the chicken egg, and then they use that as the vaccine.
Right, and so they would isolate and semi-purify, if you will, horse's serum by taking its blood and then spinning it down, and then you get the plasma mm-hmm. from that, and then they would try to clean it up as much as possible, and then they would inject you with that. So you could see potential problems with other contaminations, and I think early on there were problems with contamination in some of the earlier vaccines mm-hmm. until they learned how to clean things up, a bit more. But going back to our original discussion here so why aren't vaccines working anymore? I mean, we should be getting more sophisticated in making vaccines. I think the basic principles of making vaccines are still the same as they were back when they first started mm-hmm. making vaccines. So we've got a problem, though, that I don't think was originally foreseen, was this resistance issue in making these vaccines. So I think there's a couple of issues here. One is, if you're getting a resistant, if the target organism that you've made a vaccine against is changing, and we know that they are, just like, and it's not necessary. Here we get into evolution versus creation. Mm-hmm. And we run into this, I'm running into it a lot with regard to agriculture and our grape growing, for example. Mm-hmm. A lot of the commercial fungicides, for example, you can only apply, let's say, twice a season. Well, why can't I apply it, more than that? Well, because it's not 100% effective. So when you apply it, when you spray it on your plants, it kills off the majority of the fungus, in this case, the target fungus. But some little bit of the fungus is left that isn't affected by the chemical that you're spraying. That fungus then, if you don't rotate with another type of fungicide that has a different mechanism of action on how it kills the fungus, that fungus starts growing. And the more times you apply the same fungicide, the more of that population you have. And pretty soon you've got a tremendous fungal infection, on your vines. Mm-hmm. Because the fungicide that you're using is no longer effective, because you've killed off all of the fungus that it was effective against, and what's left is the fungus that it's not effective against.
Mm-hmm.
So taking that analogy, now let's look at the vaccines. You take the vaccines, for example, and you use them. And they'll attack, and then you build up a vaccine. So your vaccine's got the antibody, antigens. Your own body is the mechanism for killing the organism, and it produces the antibodies, these big Y-shaped proteins that are called antibodies, and it's got two sticky arms on them at the ends of the Y. And those actually are the beginning of your immune system to be able to attack a foreign object in your body. And so they stick, the whole purpose of the antibodies is to stick to the particular antigen that the antibody was made to. So the foreign protein, for example, on the coat of the virus. And once it sticks, then there are other mechanisms within your immune system that recognizes that, we got a lot of these antibodies stuck together on this foreign substance. We better go and chew it up. Mm-hmm. We better go take it apart. Mm-hmm. And so it sends in your white blood cells, for example, and they recognize that, I got to take this up. And then it starts sending in, it encapsulates antibody-coated foreign substance and starts injecting proteases and enzymes to literally destroy everything in the encapsulated it's really fascinating.
This is an amazing process. It really is. All that's going on in me right now. I'm sitting here. Whoa, I'm starting to tingle a little bit here, I think.
Right. Yeah. And it goes on constantly. But the problem is, if you're getting resistance to these, the viruses or whatever, mm-hmm. then every time you're given, let's say, a vaccine to that particular virus or even a similar virus, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. What happens is that your body produces the antibodies, the virus is no longer recognized or isn't recognized to the same extent that it was, because you've got when you get the virus, you get a whole population of viruses. It's not just one type of virus. Mm-hmm. And so it goes and kills off the virus that it recognizes, but the virus that it doesn't recognize, it just leaves. That virus then starts attacking your cells, and now, for example, you get the flu, and you wonder, why I got the mm-hmm. flu shot, why am I getting the flu? And the reason why you're getting the flu is because the vaccine that you were given originally built up antibodies to a different looking virus.
Mm-hmm.
And so the virus that you got now isn't protected. You're not protected against it, and so you wind up, getting the flu anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And research is finding that the more times, for example, that you get flu vaccinations, the less protected you are.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that's a strange thing.
Mm-hmm.
because you would think, well, I got antibodies to all different types of viruses. I should be able to have protection against it. But I think because we don't understand this whole system, there's a very, very complex system on how antibodies are made in the first place. And if you have, for example, it could be that if you have antibodies to a particular type of virus and that mutated virus comes along and you get infected by it, you could have less protection because your body thinks that it already has the antibodies in your system. So there's a mechanism within your body that actually tells your antibody-producing cells to stop making antibodies because it thinks that you got enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so you no longer have any protection whatsoever. Let me ask this.
Is it possible for medical science to anticipate the change in a virus or a bacteria, or does it always have to work backwards? In other words, it has to have something in its hands that existed, find the vaccine against it, manufacture it, and then distribute the vaccine. But it's always a step behind.
It's always a step behind. Always. And so you've got, but this other problem, like I said, this of your system probably getting shut off, and that's mm-hmm. probably what's happening with the flu virus. For example, here's the data that we know today. The more times you get the flu vaccine, the more of a reaction you're going to have when you get the flu.
Yeah.
So the sicker you're going to be, and the sicker, the longer you're going to be if you survive. Mm-hmm. That's a disturbing fact. It would tell us to say, hey, let's hold off on giving these vaccines because we're getting the same type of problem, but in a worse situation. Because If your antibody-producing cells no longer recognize a foreign substance, you have no protection.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty serious problem.
So the flu vaccine and getting multiple injections of it over several years could actually make you more susceptible to even other than flu, Is that a virus or is that a bacteria?
It's a virus.
Virus.
And
okay.
So, I don't know if that necessarily is the case, that it would make you sicker to other types of viruses, for example. But it certainly appears the data is coming in that those people that have had multiple injections of the flu virus are more susceptible to getting the flu than those that don't have injections.
But still, the industry is pushing us to do that. Now, I had a physical a year ago, and this is the first time I can recall this ever happened. I don't have that many physicals, so maybe it's been going on a long time. But a doctor sat with me at the end and said, well, how about a flu shot? Would you like a flu shot? And I said, no. Well, then, how about a shingles vaccination? And I said, well, I've had the chicken pox, and well, no, I don't want that either. Because it's like $300. I'm taking money here. This is, and then he, well, how about a, I'm losing it again, David. What's the
pneumonia?
Pneumonia, yeah. How about a shot for pneumonia vaccine? And I said, well, no. But now I've had second thoughts about that one, because that gets a lot of people. That seems to be the number one end stage disease for a lot of seniors, and I'm not far from seniorhood here. So I'm thinking, well, maybe I should get that. And now I see advertisements on TV for a pill, one-time dose of this pill that prevents. Is it because it's good business? It's economic and it's profitable to push these things.
Well, it's definitely profitable. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it, because the pharmaceutical companies that make the vaccines are raking in the profits. Mm-hmm. The more vaccines that they give, and one major company that makes the vaccines, for example, it has pushed legislation that, and this was several years ago now, that all young gals should get this particular type of vaccine against this particular type of disease. And you may recall that. And so even before your child could go to school, that your 12-year-old girl had to get these vaccines before they could go to school.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good idea. I mean, not a good idea just to blanketly vaccinate everybody. And there was a big push to prevent this. But the only group of people that really benefited from it was the pharmaceutical company, not the people that they were trying, mm-hmm. in quote, to help. So I think big pharma and big money is behind a lot of these pushings. But when the government, you know, gets involved and says, you know, CDC will come out with recommendations. Okay, we recommend that during the flu season you get a flu vaccine, and those somehow get translated as, well, this isn't, the recommendations become almost like law.
Mm-hmm.
And so your doctor then is pressured into feeling that if he doesn't
offer you
the vaccine, he's not giving you the best advice available, and mm-hmm. could be held in malpractice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily the doctor's fault. It's the pressure of the system, both from the government and also from the pharmaceutical companies, mm-hmm. that are pressuring these folks to, highly suggest that you get the flu vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And in hospitals now, the healthcare workers are being told that, you need to get vaccinated. And if you don't get vaccinated, then it's voluntary. Your vaccinations are voluntary, but you can't work on this high risk floor, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know several nurses that are refusing to get vaccinated, and some of them are being threatened to lose their job if they don't get vaccinated. That mm-hmm. doesn't sound like it's voluntary to me.
No, it doesn't.
It sounds like the hospital has made a policy, and perhaps the government is influencing the hospitals, pressuring the hospitals to push these vaccinations, mm-hmm. On people, when the data in the research is showing that the vaccinations are not only not effective, but it's making you more contagious to begin with, and in some cases making you a carrier of the very disease that you're trying to prevent.
Mm.
Yeah, this is a big problem, in our society, and one in which if we don't, get wise to the system, then we're going to have pretty soon, if, for example, the government can get this through the hospitals, do you think we as normal people, instead of your doctor suggesting that you get a vaccination, he's going to give you the vaccination whether you want it or not.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That's not good.
Well, it boils down to dollars. That's what's powering the system these days, not medical concerns. And that's popping up. That monster is rearing its ugly head in lots of segments within the medical world. 60 Minutes covered an example of that with the big medical companies and the profits they're making at whose expense. And this article on Mercola.com makes some points about vaccinations and whooping cough and mumps and measles and vaccination rates. There's a lot of good information here. It's Mercola.com. We will link to this article in the podcast here with Dr. Don when we get that posted on our website a little bit later this morning. So you can check that article too. But you can even search for it. You could go to Mercola.com and search for the article entitled Evolving Bacteria Outsmarts Vaccines. Probably any one of those words will turn it up in a search for you. So, Don, measles have come up again. No, it's mumps, isn't it, with the hockey population. That's kind of odd.
Yes, it was the mumps. And mm-hmm. The hockey team, they were all vaccinated, and they all wound up with the mumps.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it's just another example of, you thought you were protected, and, I guess you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's one of these things where they say, maybe one vaccination is not enough, so we got to vaccinate you again. And so instead of taking one, now maybe you need to take two vaccinations, be vaccinated twice to build up in what your titers. Mm-hmm. And all that means is the concentration of your antibodies towards the disease in, you know, in your blood. And we're finding here's another example of these vaccines not working.
Mm-hmm. And now we're just beginning to see this, but it's been going on for decades now. This article makes it plain that with respect to whooping cough, I'll just read this short paragraph. Going back decades, rates of whooping cough have been nearly identical in countries with both high and low vaccination rates. And according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that's the CDC, pertussis vaccination rates in the U.S. have remained stable or have actually increased since 1992. And yet we're seeing an increase in the disease, even though the vaccination rate was going up. So a lot of food for thought here. And again, there's hardly a realm of human thought more resistant to admitting mistakes and changing its ways than science, and maybe in particular medical science, because there are so many dollars involved in it and so many organizations that have reputations at stake and their livelihood at stake. So, Don, as always, grateful for the information. And, well, all I can do is suggest that people read this and read associated articles. And next time you sit down with a doctor, he says, "Hey, you really ought to get this." You might ask some additional questions before you do. We're not giving medical advice here on the station, but you need to be aware that there's some thoughts that say maybe it's not such a healthy thing to do. So,
unless, you're going to start the music. Okay, unless we were going to send out a bill.
Oh, yeah.
Then we can give medical advice.
I think so. And we could,
Don,
do that.
Yes.
You know, quick question, Don. What do the officials say about reports like this? And what do government sources say? And you got a tickle.
In the case of whooping cough, for example, when they first got to notice that, gee, it might not be as effective, they initially came out, CDC initially came out and said, well, you only need to be vaccinated once against whooping cough. When the data started coming in that not being effective, then they said, well, okay, go ahead, give two injections, you know, and those two injections aren't given at the same time. You usually have to come in two or three weeks after. So you get the first injection, come in 2 or 3 weeks or a month later, get the second injection. And the concept was to build up the concentrations of your natural antibodies to that particular disease. Well, they found that two weren't enough. And so the recommendation now is to give three. If three isn't enough, perhaps we've got a problem. So I don't see any change in the philosophy of let's stop giving the vaccinations, or at least let's reevaluate what we're doing. It's kind of patient beware, and that's a lot of medicine these days, is that the more educated you can become about your particular illness or disease, the better off you are. And there are things that you can do for your body, for example, to make you less susceptible to disease. Your body is wonderfully designed, fearfully and wonderfully designed, as the Bible says. And there are many things that you can do to build up your natural immunity to disease. And one of the best things is to get your gut in shape. For example, your gut flora, as we talked about last week, by taking probiotics, by eating the right types of oils. Not the saturated fats or the trans fats that you get from necessarily fried foods, but coconut oils and avocados and olives and olive oils and butters and organic eggs and nuts and eating those type of things, and taking probiotics will get you a long way in keeping you healthy. Another thing, for example, is taking vitamin D, especially in the winter when you're not out there getting a whole lot of sun. Vitamin D is one of those, is the sun vitamin, and is made by exposure, your skin being exposed to the sun, for example. Well, when is the flu season? The flu season's in the winter when people are indoors. Vitamin D has been shown to be a good vitamin in fighting diseases. So perhaps there is a link between low vitamin D levels and your susceptibility to disease. Well, here's an easy fix for that. Take a vitamin D and a vitamin K2 supplement, you know, every day or a couple of times a day during your, you know, especially during the winter when you're indoors. So there are things that you can, you know, that you can do in this article, actually, that talks about several of them that can build up your normal immune system. And that will go a long way in protecting you, you know, during the winter months and summer months as well.
Well, alternately, maybe a ticket to Cancun would be a good idea.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Okay. Or, we all should fly.
Yeah. Our trip to Texas.
There you go.
There you go.
There you go.
Well, yeah, it's overcast right now, and it has been. Okay. So
now we have to go a little farther south then.
Is much
Never
sun,
mind, just
although, you know, later this week we'll have some sun, so you can come down later this week.
Well, that would be, that'd be good. Don Clark, a biochemist, member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com, they've got a lot of good information. In fact, they've got the kind of science that speaks to young earth creationism, the kind of science you don't usually have access to, except through people like Creation Moments. And I am talking serious science here. You just it tends to get suppressed, not seen, not published, but there are places you can go to find it, and one of them is creationmoments.com. You can link to them from our website at brokenroadradio.com if you're so inclined. I think you'll find very useful information there. Don, thanks very much. Appreciate having you. We'll see you again next week, okay?
Okay, very good. Y'all have a great frozen week.
Well,
okay.
We'll do it.
Thanks,
bye-bye. Man. Take care, Don.